everybody. We are actually not Hinch and Rossi. I know that's a shocker, but my name is Molly, and with me is my co-host, Abby.
Hi.
And together we're...
Hey.
Hi.
So together we are...
Fast cars, fast girls. And so we're here to keep you entertained until, you know, the real people show up. Our first guest for you guys today is Richard Jones. Richard is the crew chief for Yunko's Racing, and if everybody gives him a big round of applause, he just won the Clint Bronner Award, maybe 4 hours ago. So that's awesome.
Thank you.
Great award.
Thank you very much.
Speak in. There you go. So, Clint, starting off, why don't you just tell us a little bit about, well, what you do in your job?
Well, what I do in my job is basically I oversee the crew and make sure the car is ready to hit the track at all times, make sure that it's going to be safe for the driver, make sure the setup changes are being applied to the car, just basically help out the guys. We're a bit of a smaller crew compared to most here at the Indy 500, so we all wear a bunch of hats and try to cover each other's back and get everything done.
Awesome, awesome.
You guys, I say you're a smaller crew here at Indy, but you are no strangers to racing in general. You guys, I say, have been in the MRTI series for years and years. You've got, all kinds of other things. So what all types of racing have you been involved with?
Myself, I've been involved in a lot of different racing. I started racing go-karts and cars back in New Zealand, where I'm from. My dad.
Oh, so you're a Kiwi.
I am. My dad, who's here today, actually got me involved in motorsport. He used to race. And still does to this day, but that got me involved in the sport. So since being in the States, I've worked in, started off in the Formula 2000s, Atlantic cars, ALMS, Grand Am, Champ Car when it was about, and IndyCar, and some of the Porsche Pirelli Cup, and all sorts of different types of series. The other guys on our crew, too, they're no stranger to IndyCar. We've got a good group of guys that are familiar with the cars, and, it kind of shows by our talent level. We're a smaller team, but we've got the right people in place, and we qualified 17th out there.
Yeah, so you've been making some moves so far this season, so small team or not... I say you've definitely been making some impressive moves.
For sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and we had the fortune of talking to Kyle Kaiser yesterday, and
Okay.
I say he's a sweetheart. Oh my gosh, he was so nice to talk to. So what would you say? I say because obviously you've had a long history with racing. So you said you got into karting, your dad, thanks to him.
Yep. Thanks, Dad.
and then you ended up kind of on the mission control side of things. So what would be one of your favorite memories or moments from your career?
From my career, I'd have to say being awarded the Clint Bronner Award today.
So just today.
As a mechanic, it's like winning the Indy 500.
Yeah,
in our regard. So,
well, that's awesome. And do you have the official description of the award, Molly? Because I remember it had a lot of words, but it basically was like exemplary service and like
mechanical.
Engineering.
Mechanical was in there somewhere.
Mechanical, engineering, excellence,
math.
Creativity.
Pretty much it just says a model.
Ingenuity, yeah. It basically is an award that's like, you know your stuff, and if everything goes crazy, you're the guy that can look at it and find the solution that nobody else can, is kind of the layman's terms of that award. So, yeah, that is definitely something to be proud of.
Well, thank you. You know, being awarded that, it's a pinnacle of my career. And, I also have to thank the guys that have, got my back here. It's not just me who puts a great car out on the track for Kyle.
Yeah.
And we're all deserving of this award, but I get to have my name on it, so it's pretty special to me.
That's awesome. Why don't you tell us a little bit about kind of the teamwork and the relationship between you and the rest of the crew and you and the driver, and kind of because you definitely have to have a level of trust among your team members. So.
Absolutely. Like, the teamwork is really key. You can have a fast car, but if you don't have a team that can work together, it can all go pear-shaped in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
So really just having trust in your guys, also just everybody that can get along together and, function as a good, working team, then that's crucial. You can have one bad apple in the batch and it's going to just... you know, make it hard for everybody.
And throws we're out also the whole rhythm.
For sure. And being, you know, we go from race to race, and we work some long hours of the track. So you gotta be able to get along with your crew.
Absolutely.
Well, we promised to only keep you up here a few minutes. He told us that public speaking was not something he was really good at, but
I don't believe that.
Think?
I think
he's pretty good, right?
Yeah, I don't think he seems very shy.
I think so. I think he did a really good job. So one of our favorite questions to ask people, and you can leave if you give us a good answer, is what is something about you that not a lot of people know, like a secret little skill or a hobby that you have?
Hidden talent, secret passion.
I used to play the bagpipes in school, so when I see these pipers out here.
All right. That's fantastic.
Do you still play?
No, but I wish I did. I'm not sure if I could play today if I picked up a set of pipes. But,
I bet, you know what? I bet we could find the Gordon
I'm pretty sure I couldn't.
giving you, yeah, I bet they'd let you have a shot with them. You could at least walk with them and pretend.
There you go.
So, all right.
Everybody, another round of applause
another,
for Mrs. Jones.
Yeah. Big round of applause.
Award-winning mechanic.
Thank you.
All right.
All right, our next guest, Molly, is going to help escort to the stage. He is probably one of the most famous men at this track who has not won an Indy 500. He is the IMS official historian, Donald Davidson. Why don't you go ahead and tell us how long you've been the historian and kind of how you got started here.
Are you kidding me? All right. I hope you can hear me okay. I can't hear me.
I can. Good. You sound good to me.
Well, it's a very long story, but I'll try and give you a short version.
Okay.
And I was born and raised in England, and motor racing was always embraced by the English public, but I'm talking about Grand Prix and sports car racing. They didn't know what Terre Haute was. And so I always knew who the drivers were because you couldn't help but not. You'd hear the names all the time. And so when I was about 12, all of a sudden one day something clicked, and I don't really know what it was, but I suddenly got interested in the history of Grand Prix racing and sports cars. And so I found that I could memorize results. And at that time, there were only like maybe 8 or 9 Grand Prix in a year. And every event was a classic event. I memorized the winners for the current year, and then I memorized the winners for the previous year, and then I seconds and thirds, and then at some point I became aware of the fact there was a thing called the Indianapolis 500. And now you're sorry that you asked me the question, but probably the reason I learned about it was in the early days of the World Championship of Drivers, the Indianapolis 500 counted. And it didn't really make any sense, but there was no American Grand Prix. And so they thought, well, will the Indianapolis 500 will count. And so when you looked at the box score of who scored what points, where, you'd have all the familiar names, except Indianapolis would be a column with a bunch of strange names like Vukovich and Ruttman and Nazarick. Who are they? And so I wanted to know more, and probably when I first got my first Floyd Climber Indianapolis 500 yearbook, my world changed. And I loved the looks of the cars and the car names. And there's a lot more to it. But anyway, fairly early on, I had decided I'd like to go to America and see this thing. And so it took a while to save the money. I came in 1964, and things had changed. Rear engine cars were now coming here, and I wasn't happy about that. And So, but anyway, from the time I arrived, and there's a lot of details, but the short version, relatively short version, is that they, because I purchased a ticket as an overseas visitor, that they gave me a bronze badge to get me in the garage area. And so I arrived on late Friday, the day before qualifications in 64. I went into the garage area with my bronze. Things started to happen in a hurry, and less than 24 hours later, I had a silver. And I met all my heroes, and I was amazed at how friendly the race drivers were. I mean, I was astonished by that. I figured the drivers would be very intense, snappy. I thought they'd have handlers, and they didn't. There was a couple of the more successful drivers maybe had a little bit of an edge, but the rank and file guys were just some of the nicest people you could meet, and I was just amazed by that. So again, more of an answer than you wanted, but every day, every minute of the track was magic, and Sid Collins took me under his wing and a bunch of other people. And so when my holiday was up, I went back to England and thought, I got to pursue this. So I immediately set about applying for a green card, and I came back in 65 on a one-way ticket. But if I can just tell a couple of little anecdotes, if I may.
Oh, absolutely. About
that. I mean, I got tons of stories, but... some of you, if you know, but the fact that you belong to this and you're here, within a matter of hours, Sid Collins was already talking to me about the possibility of being part of the race day broadcast, and I was a guest. I just went on and I did one interview and then.
I want to interrupt because heard a trivia factoid about you that you one of the things that led to you being asked as a guest is that you just had in your mind all of this knowledge and just all this memorization of drivers and years, and like you were just, your mind is just a working history book.
Yeah.
And Sid Collins was extremely impressed by how much knowledge you had.
Well, what I had done basically is. I was blessed with what later turned out to be, I was told, was selective, retentive, easy access memory. I wasn't worth a damn in school. I was a poor student, but I would get things that interested me, and I would just I would soak it up, and it would soak me up. And I actually had gone from memorizing the Indianapolis 500 winners, which was a lot easier to do then because it was less than half the number that there are now. But I did seconds and thirds, and then eventually I'd memorize the complete results for every year. And so anytime I met a driver, no matter what era, I could do their whole career. And when I came here, I mean, I was in beyond seventh heaven because there was guys from the 20s and 30s and even pre-World War I drivers were still around and riding mechanics and chief mechanics, and I had memorized all this stuff. And what I was amazed at how the participants received that.
Yeah.
Because some of them thought I was a put-on. I mean, I learned that very early on, that there was a lot of needling. The drivers were a very tight-knit bunch. In fact, the whole racing fraternity, there was a lot of camaraderie, and practical jokes was part of their, you know, part of their camaraderie. And so I remember this one night, and I'm wearing a suit and a white shirt and a tie, and not very many people were doing that. And I had a blonde pompadour, and I wore what the Brits called winkle picker shoes, which had pointed toes, and that got a lot of attention. And so my dream that I might be able to meet race drivers was turned around the other way, because I was in the garages at night And I'd be either in the leader card garage or George Sally or something. And I'd look, and there'd be like a line of three or four drivers that were, you know, there's Bill Cheeseburg and then Herdebees is behind him. They're waiting for their turn. And I couldn't believe it. Anyway, on the, I'll let you ask me another question in a few moments, but on Saturday, which was the first qualifying day, qualifying was over, and it was probably about 6:30 at night, and a number of you probably remember how the garage area used to be, where it was two banks east to west, and I'm down at the south east corner, which where the leader card garage was, and Charlie Brockman, who I had met, and I think he was Channel 13 sports director then, and he's in there talking to A.J. Watson. And he called out to me and said, come on, and he said, have you met A.J. Watson? And I said, no. And so I'm meeting A.J. Watson, who was as famous as any of the drivers, and so I started talking to Watson about his career. I did his, you know, pretty much as I knew it from year to year. And I remember being very unnerved because he was sort of, his face was like about 2 feet away from mine. Now, how blue his eyes were, and there was this sort of little trace of a smile, and all of the guys around him were laughing and punching his arm and everything like that. And I think he was trying to figure out if I was a put-on. And so when I got finished, he says, can you change a wheel? And everybody started laughing. I said, what? He said, no. He said, really? We need help for race day. And this was another eye-opener for me because I just figured that everybody had a crew all prearranged. And I didn't know that a lot of teams would have like a chief mechanic and a couple of helpers, and they would pick up their race day crew.
Wow.
And if, you know, people missed the show, they'd sign on for race day to work. I was amazed by that. Anyway, so he said, no, he said, we're trying to run four cars. And what happened was, it was the transition from rear engine to, from front engine to rear. And Roger Ward and Don Branson were the two lead drivers, and they qualified the rear engine cars. The Roadsters were there in case they decided to wait another year, which some people, you know, like Foyt and Parnelli, drove both in practice and said, we're still going to do the front engine car. So they've got two front engine cars, which were the Ward and Branson, you know, fall back onto. And they thought, well, we've got him here. Let's run him anyway. So Jim Rathman was an assigned driver, but then he ended up not running. And so it was Chuck Stevenson and Judd Larson. And Watson says, we need help for race day. And I said, well, you know, that I said, I don't know what to say, but, you know, I haven't been to a race before. Maybe I should watch one. And I said, but you're not kidding, are you? He said, no. He said, why don't you think about it? And if you want to do it, come back and see me. Well, I didn't. But I thought, golly, I've only been here a little over 24 hours, and I'm talking to Sid Collins about being a member of the Speedway Radio Network, and Watson's offering me a job as a crew member. And I didn't do it, but I've often thought, and forgive the long story, but I assume that some of you are maybe enjoying this, hopefully. And I thought, golly, I should have done it because I would have had a T-shirt and I could have been in the crew shots. I could have been one of the people standing behind the car, you know.
Yeah, looking cool, leaning against it.
Looking cool, right? And then I didn't do it. And so I've often thought, golly, I wonder what they would have had me doing. And my guess was that if I did anything, I probably would have been involved with the Chuck Stevenson car. And then poor Chuck was involved in the Sachs McDonald accident, and so the calculating side of me says, "What you should have done it, and you could have started the race as a Chuck Stevenson crew member. Then you could have gone up and done the radio broadcast with your shirt." But anyway,
well,
but so
hindsight's anyway. Always 2020.
I'm sorry.
Hindsight is always 2020.
But Then to kind of bring it more up to date, when I came back in 65 with a green card, one-way ticket, wing and a prayer, I had no job offers at all. I just thought, I got to pursue this. And a dear man named Henry Banks, who was the former driver and now was the director of competition for USAC, he said, you know, we may have something for you at USAC. And there was an opportunity that I didn't realize, I learned about later. The 65 race was on Monday, May 31st, because the 500, May 30th fell on Sunday, and there was a sprint race up at Winchester. So I went up for that, and that was a great thing, because Judd Larson won the feature and then gave me a ride around Winchester in the pace car at speed. So that was another experience, which I could tell you more about. But I, on the Thursday, I went to the USAC office, which is overgoing a major overhaul right now. And I got hired by USAC. And then my job, I couldn't believe it was the keeper of records for all the sprints, midgets, and stock cars. And I said, are you kidding me? You know, write all this down on cards for the individual drivers with the qualifying times and the prize money. Are you kidding me? And so the irony is, and my life has been full of ironies, forgive me if I talk a lot, but there's a lot of experiences I like to talk about. The reason that that job became available was that the fellow who had been doing it was studying law. And he'd been doing night school and courses and stuff, and now he was going to have to do it full time. And his name was Jeffrey V. Bowles. And he went on to become the special judge in Hendricks County. And when I first met him, he was married, but he didn't have any kids yet. And a couple of years later, he had a son named Doug. And you may be familiar with
Doug. You might know
Bowles.
Him, the president Doug of the IMS.
And so I owe Jeff Bowles a huge deal of gratitude. In fact, he's still part of the observers team now and has got more energy than I can believe. And so anyway, I went to work for USAC, and I was there 32 years and 8 months, or 31 years and 8 months, and then went over to the home and family. First, I was at Telex, which is now IMS Productions, to be a film historian, and then I became a historian at the across the street in the museum on January 1st of 1998.
Excellent. That's wonderful.
Now he said,
hey, does anybody have an oxygen tank real quick? Let him catch his breath.
And then in 1966, I'm really dating myself now, WIBC, there was a radio program, and it was Sid Collins' idea. And it was a call-in show, and it was called Dial Davidson, and it ran 15 minutes. Can you believe that? It wasn't enough time. Anyway, things changed at IBC, and the whole, I mean, this is more radio history than anything. They slipped way down in the ratings, and I think they fell to about sixth. And then a fellow named Jim Hilliard, who'd been on the air as Jimmy Darren, was brought in to save MS. Oh, well, it wasn't MS then, it was Fairbanks, Fairbanks Broadcasting. And so there was WIBC was 1070, and 93.1 was WIBC FM. And Hilliard said, you got to play rock and roll on the FM side. And Fairbanks was horrified, and he said, no. He said, IBC, that's your mainstream, you know, young adults, mid-adults type of a thing. You got to play rock and roll on the FM side. And so WNAP and The Buzzard and Buster Bodine and Mike Griffin and Chris Connor and Adam Smasher, all those guys. And so then in 71, he said, we're going to cover the 500. We're going to do 30 days in May like it's never been done. And so part of that coverage, all qualifications all day, I did a program at 6 o'clock, which was a call-in show, which is now the talk of Gasoline Alley. But they didn't have a title for it in the early days, and Lou Palmer used to call it Do It to Donald, and Chuck Riley called it Stymie the Limey. So anyway, it was a call-in show, and you could win prizes, and its format's changed. In fact, the station's been has changed hands three times, and I think there's been like 15 program directors, and now we're on from 8 to 9, but we're still on 1070. So we're just going to, in fact, tonight is the final show of the 48th season, so it doesn't mean too bad.
That's wonderful. And you guys can still listen to the talk of Gasoline Alley.
Who doesn't listen to that?
Yeah, you can catch up. You can go online and
am I done? Up.
You are done, sir.
Oh, I'm done.
We've been told only talk till about 3:20 because they want to start on time. And does IndyCar Nation need us to say anything special at this moment? They're not paying any.
IndyCar rocks.
IndyCar rocks.
All right, and let's everybody give Donald Davidson a big hand of applause.
Huge, huge hand. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate it.
You want to ask me one question? So.
Well, do you want to? I say you want to ask a.
Oh no!
No! Because they're starting it.
No, it's just like Bobby Unser. One question, and then he just takes off.
Right.
Is anybody upset about that though? Because that was a really great.
Yeah, I say that was a pretty awesome answer to.
Yeah, I think that was fantastic. So let's let him know that. Okay.
All right.
Thank you again, sir.